You're listening to The Leonard Lopate Show on AM 820 and 93.9 WNYC.
A policeman shoots a dangerous armed suspect in the Bronx, and the bullet passes through the target and hits a 10-year-old Hispanic child. A minister sets up a month-long protest vigil around the cop's home, and the stress created by dealing with these protests breaks up the cop's marriage. Now, it isn't a story in today's newspaper. It's the plot of a new novel called The Whites by Richard Price, writing as Harry Brandt. Richard Price has written many novels, including Lush Life, Clockers, and Freedom Land. He's also written the screenplays for movies like The Color of Money and Sea of Love, also episodes for the TV show The Wire, and a new HBO miniseries called Criminal Justice. The Whites is published by Henry Holt. I'm very pleased it has brought Richard Price back to our show. Hi.
Good to see you again.
And congratulations on the response to this book. You must have been pleased with all the reviews, including the one on the front page of the Sunday New York Times book review.
I just feel like a princess.
Well, it's, I hate to say it, it's priceless. Many of the themes here, police loyalty, accidental shootings, are very much in the news or maybe never left the news. Do you feel that the police and the public don't really understand each other?
Yeah, I mean, listen, in my experience, when the police are attacked by the media, whether they're right or they're wrong in what they did, they close ranks. This isn't the blue wall of silence. This is like Cape Buffalo forming a phalanx if they see lions, you know, and it's like all sort of balanced conversation is gone, at least for the moment until the press turns around.
The policeman in your book who shot both a bad guy and accidentally a child received both a citation for bravery and a civilian review board hearing, which kind of epitomizes the mixed message society gives to the police.
Well, that's why one of the police slang names for One Police Plaza, the headquarters, is the Puzzle Palace.
They really call it that?
Yeah, I mean, it's
Does it matter who's police chief?
No, it's just everybody is so careerist and so media sensitive up top. You know, that I think the foot soldiers just get all these mixed messages that, you know, might or might not have anything to do with the reality on the ground.
I assume that you'd already handed in the manuscript before the deaths of unarmed men in Ferguson and Staten Island and then the murder of the two cops in Brooklyn. But you must have thought, this is very timely.
Well, you know, it's unfortunate that it happened and it'll come up because of what I wrote about, but my feeling is that before Ferguson, Michael Brown, and Eric Garner, this stuff has been going on for 100 years, and it's just the advent of the cell phone. Can you imagine what was going on with the cops and people in ghetto neighborhoods in 1950, in 1930, in 1965? You know, somebody, when Rodney King happened, you know, had videotaped it and it went global. And they've been doing that ever since.
Well, we've been talking mostly about backstory. That's not what this book is mostly about. But it's credited to Richard Price writing as Harry Brandt. Why bother using a pseudonym if you put your own name right above it?
Well, originally I intended to write a straight-up genre book, like an urban thriller propelled by what happens next, who did it. But once I started writing, you know, the story started expanding horizontally. I couldn't create characters that were quick. It's just a typical Richard Price novel at the end of the day. And at this point, I regret using a pen name. But in the beginning, I had my reasons.
Well, I do understand when J.K. Rowling or Joyce Carol Oates or John Banville uses a pseudonym because they actually using a different – they are writing differently than they generally do. But here we even have a voice that we would kind of recognize as yours.
Well, you know,
which is not a bad thing, by the way.
No, but that was the idiocy of this big plan I had, that I thought I was going to write like somebody not myself.
And write it quickly, you've said.
Oh, yeah, yeah. That was the other...
Did that work out?
You know, that's like saying, that I bet that gun ain't even loaded. You know, yeah, I'm going to write quickly. You know, it's one of those famous last words.
But you must write fairly quickly because you've... had so many different projects, all seemed to be working at the same time.
Well, what happens is you write things in 2008 that come, especially if it's a movie, that comes to life in 2014. You write a pilot for a TV show in 2010 and it finally gets shot in 2014. You start a novel in 2011 and it finally gets published now. And it makes you sound like you're an octopus with a pen in each tentacle. But fact of the matter is all these things, just by coincidence, came to fruition at the same moment.
But you've also said that there's a big difference between writing scripts, I remember on previous shows, mm-hmm. between writing scripts and writing a novel like this. You can always see the difference just by looking at the page. A script, there's going to be more white space than type. And in
a
novel, of course,
telegram.
It's the other way around.
Yeah. Well, the big difference between screenplays and novels for me is when I write a novel, I'm in control all the way through. When I'm writing screenplays, I could write the world's greatest screenplay, but I'm at the mercy of the marketing at the time. Is this a hot subject? Can we get Will Smith? You know, and so, I mean, at least novels, I know that this is going to get published. I write a screenplay, I'll make a lot more money, but the odds are it's going to be years, if ever.
John Borman was here yesterday, and he talked about making Point Blank, and he said he and Lee Marvin looked at the script and said, we don't like this. The next thing you know, they just had it totally rewritten.
Well, they do that. I mean, take a great movie like Double Indemnity. That actually took something like 8 years or 10 years to get to the screen.
Billy Wilder rewrite it? Well, he was a screenwriter, so.
Well, he wrote it and he directed it, and I think either Chandler or James Cain was part of the – no, not James Cain. Chandler or Faulkner, somebody. And it still took 10 years.
My guest is Richard Price, writing as Harry Brandt, the book The Whites. And why Harry Brandt?
I picked
the name.
Is
that like coming up with a character's name?
No. I had an agent, Carl Brandt, who passed away last year. And he took me on as a 22-year-old when I had 30 pages of The Wanderers to my name, all handwritten on spiral notebook paper, pulled out, so there's like all this fringy stuff. And he just took me on with those 20 pages, and he was like my WASP father for 18 years. We parted ways when I was 40. And
so you're honoring him in a way.
Yeah. And so when I say I wish I hadn't had this damn pen name, that's no disrespect to him. It was just, you know, that was my intention. And Harry just seemed like a good old urban name, you know, from a housing project.
The Whites in your title is not a racial reference, as many people might assume, based on some of your previous books. Can you explain what it means?
Yeah, very quickly, that I've come across a number of detectives who go into retirement obsessed with this one case where they were never able to bring the perp to justice, or it was unsolved, or the perp thumbed his nose at him and walked away. And these guys will go into retirement with legal boxes filled with police notebooks and transcripts. So these guys that I've met, and have met legions of them, they're like Ahab. And this one guy that they couldn't get for some hideous thing, he's like the whale. The white whale.
So do cops actually use the term whites, or only writers with a sense of literary history?
Nah, I made that up.
But each policeman in the book has only one white. I would assume that some would have more than one.
You would think so, but, I mean, Joyce Carol Oates said only one. But the fact of the matter is, I have met guys from 1986 to last year, and they talk about one case. They don't talk about two. They don't talk about three. They talk about a case, and they have seen murders much more heinous, with higher body counts, with more innocent victims. One case nails them, and I don't know why that case, because the other guy, it doesn't have any interest in the case that his friend is obsessed with.
And Billy Graves, your narrator, compares looking up old police cases to Facebooking old girlfriends.
Well, yeah, that was his excuse. But yeah, you look up your old perps to see if they're in the system, because sometimes you're just waiting for these guys.
The cops in your book stay in touch with victims' relatives, keep up to date on the suspects who escape convictions. And now they handle many cases every year. Why would these specific cases be the ones that they just can't
forget? Because there was some interface between that cop's personality and that cop's history or that cop's soul with either the victims, the family of the victims. Like I had one of the cops that I was modeling this book on. He was obsessed with the killing of a 22-year-old kid from suburban Illinois who came from a big Irish family. He was drunk on the Lower East Side, and he went into the face of a guy with a gun because he thought he was in a Western. And this cop he got so connected to this big Irish family. He was Irish himself. And the terrible things that happened to this family, it's one bullet and it kills seven people or it destroys 12 lives. And he just couldn't let go of this family, you know, and they actually wound up naming a kid after him.
Sounds like the cops are writing books in an odd way in their own heads.
Well, everybody writes books. My shrink said that we are the stories we tell ourselves about ourselves.
We keep on hearing that.
About I don't really
television
have a shrink.
Personalities. In the 1990s, Billy was a member of a team of elite young cops assigned to a high crime precinct in the East Bronx. They call themselves the Wild Geese. Do cops actually use names like that?
Yeah. What happens is, cops like rappers, they pick up all these cultural references. If you listen to hip hop songs, you know, they'll talk about Ike and Tina. They'll talk about some jingle that they heard when they were a kid. Cops are the same way. They just pick cultural stuff out of the air. So they'll pick an old movie from 1978. You know, it was like a squad of, they were expendable, sort of freelance Green Berets, and an international cast. And this squad was called the Wild Geese. So these cops being like, you know, they have cultural stickum on their brains. So they just picked the name the Wild Geese. Otherwise, it just sounded like a bunch of ducks.
Why do you split the action and tension between two narrators, Billy and Milton?
I've adapted that style because I tend to write books that are like cinder blocks. And I've always found alternating perspectives, one a little bit ahead of the other, makes it speed along. This time I used alternating perspectives, even though it wasn't like a thick book.
Do the police always mistrust journalists?
I don't know. I would, if I was a cop, I would. And if I was a journalist, I'd take everything a cop says to me with a grain of salt.
The press influences the way we think about crime and the police.
Right. I've been in situations where there are reporters out there on a big crime, and the DCPI, the public information guy, to get an update on the crime, won't talk to the cops on the street. They'll talk to the reporter covering it because the reporter has just as many connections. And sometimes the reporter gets information faster than the cops.
There's a scene near the end of the book between Billy and a former reporter where both characters are relieved at what almost gets said but doesn't. Silence is an important factor here. And that's something you probably have developed also because of all of the movies and television shows that you've worked on.
I don't know. I can't shut up personally. Silence is like science fiction to me.
Now, this is set in the Bronx.
It's set everywhere, in the five boroughs. But there's a lot of shout-outs to the very original places where I grew up in the East Bronx and other places. I was just going back in my head. But this is really set in Manhattan because the nature of the job of Night Watch, here's a small squad of detectives between, say, midnight and 8 a.m. when there are no active detective squads in any of the local precincts. This motley crew has got to respond to all the felonies from Washington Heights to Wall Street. And
they're kind of a skeleton crew.
Yeah, and you don't know what you're going to get. But it's not like, okay, this is my area. The entire island is your area. And I loved it because it was kind of like Ouija for me, you know, responding to like fires and stabbings and you know, rub outs. And I just love, it was like a snapshot of Manhattan from high and low. Everything, the only thing they had in common is it took place in the wee hours.
Well, you've done other neighborhoods as well. Lush Life was in the Lower East Side. You've done, the Clockers was in New Jersey, if I remember correctly.
It was basically Jersey City, but I called it fictionally Dempsey.
You wrote the new HBO miniseries Criminal Justice. Was there some doubt that the show would continue after James Gandolfini died?
Yeah, I mean, I think the show was dead in the water at that point. He shot the pilot and he passed away about not too much later. People were stunned, and you know, there was no talk of anything.
There was no sense of that he was ill while he was shooting the
No,
pilot.
I mean, you know, he's a man who, you know, he liked to eat, and, you know, and he had his appetites. But yeah, I mean, he was the same guy. He looked like Tony Soprano. He looked like the bit actor that he was 20 years earlier in other films. And he was young. He was in his early 50s, I think. So, and the show went dormant for about 6 months. All of a sudden, Robert De Niro was going to do it. And so that revived in the show. And then he ultimately passed, and the show went back to dormant. And somehow John Turturro popped up, you know, and
Well, he's such a quirky actor. It must be a lot of fun to write for him.
He's the penultimate New York face and voice. I love his stuff. I did two other movies with him, Color of Money and Clockers. I actually played a Viagra salesman in Criminal Justice. You know, selling bootleg Viagra to John Turturro, who's taking antibiotics for eczema and can't get it up.
You recently wrote the screenplay for Child 44, based on a novel by the British actor Tom Robb Smith. Planning to write a screenplay for the movie version of The Whites?
Well, apparently, yes, I am. It was Scott Rudin and Sony Pictures, or should I say Scott Rudin in North Korea, you know, bought the rights to the book. I'm going to be kidnapped, and I'm going to write, you know, in some dungeon in Pyongyang. Yes.
Well, all your emails will be exposed, that's for sure.
Yeah.
But is adapting your own book different from working on someone else's?
Oh, doing your own book is a nightmare because you can't – listen, your book is thick. A screenplay is like a singing telegram, and you have to debride and strip down and strip down and throw away characters and this and that. But it's your baby, and it's sort of like, this is my birth child. And all of a sudden, the child is not mine, but I've been hired as a babysitter, and my boss is the people that hired me, even though I gave birth to this kid.
Michael Connelly, who is the author of the Harry Bosch series of mysteries, said in his review that he doesn't read much crime fiction because he finds that he can almost always guess the ending, but he felt that your book kept him in suspense until the end. That's the highest kind of praise you can receive.
Yeah, I mean, I think he might have also been referring to not just, you know, figuring out who did it or why did it, but I think it was just, you know, how do I know? I shouldn't say. I mean,
well, I'm sure that you have the same experience sometimes. You're reading a book in the mystery genre, or the cop genre, and you say, oh, gee, this is
You know,
doing
those type
that?
Of books, I never... I don't care who did it. I'm reading – when I read not a mystery writer. It sounds like Agatha Christie. When I'm reading a crime novel, crime-centric novel, the last thing I care about is who did it. What I respond to is the voice of the author and how well the characters are developed.
And I've just been speaking with Harry Brandt, who's been filling in for Richard Price, the author of The Whites. It is published by Henry Holt. Sorry, Richard. Okay.
Can you keep this Harry Brandt guy here so I can just jump in a cab and get out of here and away from him?
Thank you so much for being on our show.
You're welcome.